Welcome to episode 13 of the podcast English for Life in the UK. This podcast is for intermediate level learners of English and is produced by a group of volunteer teachers from the St Augustine Centre in Halifax, Yorkshire, where we provide a range of support and advice to those in need and in particular to asylum seekers, refugees and migrants. This podcast follows and supports the course we are teaching at the centre, but we hope it will be helpful to anyone wanting to improve their English and at the same time learn more about life in this country. A reminder that the transcript, that is the written version of this episode, will be available soon on our website, www.stAugustineCentreHalifax.org.uk. Today's episode is about the economy and is brought to you by Christine, John and myself, Mark. So this week we're doing about the economy, and we're going to look at the public sector and the private sector parts of the economy. So Christine, what do we mean by the public sector?
Well, that's the part of the economy that's paid for by the government, by central government or by local government. They collect taxes in lots of different ways, but they collect money in and then they spend it on the good of society. For example, healthcare, education, defence.
Okay, and when we were talking with our students, we asked them what do they think would be the highest areas of spending on the public sector by the government. And that was interesting, wasn't it?
It was very interesting because they all thought that the highest, the biggest expense would be defence. Where actually, that's really quite small as a part of public spending. It's about 6%. So I asked them why they thought it was defence, and they see a strong army. They see it, and that's why they think it. Interestingly, when we had the exercise of, I invited them to say which areas they would like to spend, which areas of spending they would like to see increased. They didn't want defence spending to be increased. They were glad it was only 6%
in the main. Yeah, what were the areas they came up with that was their preferences?
Well, let me tell you what the current spending is.
Okay, yeah.
At the moment, the current proportion of spending, approximately, and then we can talk about how they would change it. At the moment, the UK government spends almost 20% of revenue on pensions. 18% on healthcare, 14% on welfare.
What do we mean by welfare? What would that include?
A whole range of things. Care for older people, extra support for people who can't work. So unemployed people, perhaps some people with disabilities. Yeah. And also personal and social care for elderly people or other people who can't look after themselves.
So that's welfare, yeah.
Yeah. Education is 11%, or has been 11% of the public spending. Defence, 6%. Protection, it's called, but that means police, firefighters, prisons, mm-hmm. 4% of the public purse is spent on that. Transport, likewise, 4%. And then, of course, the 6%, similar to the amount spent on defence, is spent on servicing the national debt. It's paid on interest.
So that's the money that the government has borrowed, because that's the other way it gets money in, as well as taxes. It borrows money.
It does.
And that's the interest that the government has to pay on that money it's borrowed.
It does. And we chose to consider the economy today because, of course, yesterday was the budget. That's the day when the Chancellor reveals plans for spending for the year ahead, or for years ahead in some case, but plans for future spending. And so I invited them to imagine that they were Chancellor and asked them to say what spending they would like to increase and yes. what to decrease.
That was interesting, wasn't it? I remember, so I think one of them argued for more money for education.
Yes.
And her argument was that actually a more educated workforce will actually be more productive, and that science, the use of science, will help to improve things in society. So we need scientists, so education's important for that. I thought that was a good argument.
I did as well. And also somebody argued for healthcare, increased money to healthcare. And essentially, the argument is, of course, without good health, one can't do anything else.
Yeah.
It's essential.
Yeah.
I expected them to suggest that they spent less money on pensions. 20% seems rather a lot. But no.
No.
Nobody argued for that.
Christine and I were pleased with that because we're pensioners.
We are pensioners.
We were delighted to hear that.
We were laughing about
happy
that.
Happy for the money to be spent on us. So that was good, yes.
But also, that then nobody wanted to increase defence spending.
Yeah.
But we looked also at what the Chancellor himself came up with. And it was interesting that in this budget, this year, there's been a large... very substantial increase in public spending. And I'm talking about this without having all the facts in front of me, so forgive it. I won't go into detail, but he is planning on a big increase in education spending, a big increase in health spending. In fact, he said that, of course, because of the coronavirus emergency at the moment, that the spending for the National Health Service can be whatever is required.
What else did the Chancellor do yesterday?
He's promised a lot of a big investment into the regions as well. I know that West Yorkshire, this region, is going to get several billion pounds to spend locally on improved transport, and like Manchester, in future, they will have their own mayor and become a separate region.
I think we'll talk about that in the next session when we talk about local government. So we can give some more information about that there.
Yeah, good idea. There was also increased spending on transport, on rail and on roads.
Mm-hmm. You said unusually. Why did you say unusually? There was a big increase in public spending.
Well, I think, John, I think you explained that very, very well about the traditional spending patterns of the Conservative and the Labour governments.
Yeah, broadly speaking, we explained that traditionally the Labour Party would be more inclined to spend more money on public services, so more money on education, health, social care. Whereas the Conservatives, broadly speaking, would not spend quite as much on public services and would push for lower taxes for people and lower taxes on corporations. They'd see that as a better way to grow the economy.
Mm. So it was very surprising this yesterday when the Chancellor put forward such a massive increase in public spending.
I think some of it has been on the cards, so to speak, for a while, because the current government have been in power for 10 years and the austerity programme has seen quite a large drop in public spending, so I think they realise perhaps people have had enough of that and they're trying to rebalance things a little bit.
So then we went on to look at the private sector. John, you looked at different aspects of the private sector. Tell us a bit about that.
We explained that broadly the economy is split into public and private sectors. So in terms of Christine examined the public sector spending in the budget and the government and local government spending. So I went on then to look at the private sector. So extraction of raw materials, coal mining, the oil industry, things like that. Well, basically we broke it down into three sectors in the private sector. So the primary sector, so we looked at farming, oil extraction, coal extraction in the UK, and explained how they'd historically been important factors in the UK economy. We went on to look at the secondary sector or the manufacturing sector. So we looked at things like construction, automotive plants, factories, finished goods, the textile industry. And then the tertiary sector, or what is commonly known as the service sector, which is increasingly important in the UK economy. So we looked at things like tourism, retail, restaurants, and the big one that we examined was the financial sector.
What would the financial sector include?
So, well, we explained that it's quite often referred to as the city, so in terms of the City of London, and high street banking, the banks that we use for our money, industrial banking, and the insurance sector, things like that. So we explained what a big part of the UK economy that is, and how it links us with economies across the world.
So in fact, those three sectors have changed significantly over time, haven't they?
Yeah, we looked at it, we looked at the modern contemporary economy and some of the most important things, and the things that people, as they come to live here, will be finding jobs in and that they will be finding employment in. But we looked at it from a historical perspective that, if you like, a primitive economy would be very heavily invested in the primary sector. So most people would work in farming, agriculture,
fishing,
raw material extraction. As our economy developed through the Industrial Revolution, people were freed up to work in manufacturing. So people moved into mass production of clothing, of machine tools, and eventually of transportation, automotive, things like that. And when we kind of explained that in that section of the economy reached its sort of apex in the late 19th, early 20th century, we went on to explain that in the post-war world, things like shipbuilding, manufacturing, textiles have dropped off considerably. And they were very quick to realise, you know, we went through the iPhones we were using, the clothes we were wearing. They recognised very quickly that these things are now predominantly made in Taiwan, Vietnam, Bangladesh, China. And the UK economy has developed into been more reliant on the service sectors. So things, as you say, like banking, finance, retail.
And tourism.
And tourism. I was quite surprised that, I think they said it was 10% of the UK economy based in around tourism. So I knew it were a large part of the economy, but I was quite surprised even by that.
It's because we're here in Halifax. It doesn't really get its full share of tourism here.
Well, we looked at, as we always try and put a local kind of spin on things, we explained, you know, that when we walk into town, we walk past lots of empty textile mills, don't we? Which 40, 50 years ago would have produced all the clothes that we wear. And now these buildings and areas have been turned over to perhaps IT offices, advertising offices. And we explained about the Peace Hall.
Or gyms.
Things like that. Services.
Restaurants.
Yeah. And we looked at the Peace Hall, the things that have been done in and around the Peace Hall, the retail section within the Peace Hall, the cinemas, the attractions that they put on. So you can see Halifax of a kind of microcosm of moving away from manufacturing and moving towards being more reliant on the service economy.
Language support. In this part of the podcast, I'm going to identify a few pieces of vocabulary and phrases from this episode and provide a bit of additional explanation and help with them. So I'm going to start with the Chancellor. Christine talked about the Chancellor. The Chancellor, his full title is Chancellor of the Exchequer. He is a politician, he or she, he at the moment, is a politician, a member of the government, of the cabinet, and next to, after the Prime Minister, the Chancellor of the Exchequer is usually regarded as the most important, the next most important member of the government. And his or her responsibilities are for the economy and for the public finances. When John was talking about different parts of the private sector, he referred to automotive plants. And just to explain, that basically means car factories, places where cars are made. And that is one example of another phrase that John used, which is mass production. Mass production is when lots of the same product or thing are made in the same place using a common process. So most factories operate some kind of mass production. When we were talking about the local issues, we talked about the Peace Hall in Halifax. Now, for those of you who are not from Halifax or didn't listen to our earlier episode about the Industrial Revolution, the Peace Hall is a magnificent 18th century building in Halifax, which used to be a place where pieces of cloth were traded. It was a large market for cloth, and it's called the Peace Hall, as in a piece of cloth. Today, it is a tourist attraction. The building has been well looked after and restored. There are shops, there are restaurants and other attractions there. So that is the Peace Hall in Halifax. You can Google it and have a look at the information about it if you are interested, and it's well worth a visit if you are local or in this area. Next, I wanted to pick up on two interesting phrases or idioms that John used. He said, speaking of the fact that the government had decided to spend quite a lot more money in this year's budget, that this had been on the cards, so to speak. When something is on the cards, it means it's likely to happen. People have been thinking about doing it, planning to do it. It was on the cards. John then said, on the cards, so to speak. And that's because it is an expression or an idiom. It's not a literal translation. So nobody had actually written something on a card, but it was something that was likely to happen. And the phrase that's used, the expression is, that is something is on the cards. The second one that John used was also, he said that we were going to put a local spin on things. To put a spin on something is to present something differently. In this particular case, we were talking about the economy. And so we then spent some time thinking about how this applied locally, in the case of the Peace Hall, for example. So we put a local spin on what we'd been saying about the economy generally. This is also used often in political talk, where we would say that a particular political party or the government has put a spin on something, and that means very often they've tried to present something in a rather better light than it might otherwise have been, to look slight, something, make something look better than it really was. And in fact, there is an expression, a person who works for the government, who helps them to get their case across, is often called a spin doctor. That is, somebody who works for a politician and helps to get their case over to the public generally, often by slightly overemphasizing the good things about something and underplaying the bad things. So that's it for this week. I hope those expressions have been useful. Just a reminder again that the transcript for this episode will be available in a few days or weeks' time on our website. If you Google St. Augustine's Centre, Halifax, then you will be able to find a link to our website. And on the website, on the front page, is information under the heading of English for Life in the UK. And there is a link there to both the podcasts and the transcripts. Thank you again for listening. Goodbye.